You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras, the number one podcast for bow hunting product information and hunting stories from across the nation. And now, here's your nine-fingered host, Dan Johnson.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. Thanks for tuning in. It's Wednesday, it's hump day, and that means it's time for another podcast. And today we're joined by another one of my buddies from the whitetail world, a guy named Justin Czar, and you may know him from bowhunting.com or the Bow Hunt or Die web show. And today we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about the 2018 whitetail report that is put out annually by QDMA. And specifically today, we're going to talk about, and let me pull it up here, we're going to be talking about hunter numbers and hunter spending in the hunting industry, the hunting community. And we're just going to break those down. We're going to talk about the decline of hunters and the decline of spending by hunters over the last 5 years, and talk about specific states. And just, I guess it's almost like a BS session, because I looked at this report that our good friend Lindsey Thomas Jr. sent me, and we're going to talk about it today. And I thought, you know what? Let's get Justin Czar on the phone, because he always has something to say about things like this. And so that's what today's podcast is about. And the good thing is I scheduled this series with Justin. I don't necessarily know what it's going to be about, but he's scheduled to be on the podcast after this one three additional times. And I think we're going to talk about some serious topics, and we're also going to talk about some fun topics, because what would the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast be if it was serious all the time? It would be boring and no one would listen to it. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, real quick, commercial, Ozonix. I mean, you guys have, over this last 2 or 3 weeks, I've put out a lot of content regarding Ozonix, talking about how I like Ozonix. If you haven't had the opportunity already, go check out the last one of the last podcasts I've done called Ozonix, Real People, Real Results. And it's a podcast where I interview four people and we talk about, you know, their experience with Ozonix, why they like it. I'm definitely a huge fan of it. So you know, if you haven't had the opportunity to learn about what Ozonix is and the power of ozone, you need to go to ozonixhunting.com and be sure to enter the discount code 9FINGERS17. So that's the number 9 followed by the word fingers, 17, 9FINGERS17, and you will receive a discount of $75 off of all orders over $399 and up. So that's a really good discount, especially if you're looking to get into Ozonix. And then here at the end of the month, in the beginning of April, that discount code is going to change. So if you like this discount and have been holding off, I strongly suggest buying Ozonix and using that discount code now, because due to them going direct, they've been changing some things, and I'll have a new offer for you guys starting on April 1st. So there's that. Now, I think that's it, man. Huge shout out to all the other partners, and thanks again for tuning in, guys. Last thing I wanted to say is, please go And on all the social media, whether that's Instagram or Facebook, not only follow the Nine Finger Chronicles, but follow the Sportsman's Nation as well, and listen to all the other podcasts on the Sportsman's Nation podcast network, not only on the Whitetail feed, but now on the Big Game feed as well. Lots of great content by lots of great hosts, man. I'm telling you, we put out a lot of great content. And now I'm just rambling. I'm done talking. Let's get into today's Whitetail 2018 Whitetail Report with our good buddy, Justin Czar. All right, on the podcast with me right now, and I don't know, how many times have you been on the podcast?
I think this might be three or four now.
Something
like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Justin Czar, welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast.
Well, thank you for having me here. I assume that the first couple times I didn't do so bad that I got fired. So that's a good sign anyways.
Well, I'm also running low on people to reach out to.
I understand. Bottom of the barrel.
So, man, we had a little bit of a conversation at the ATA show this year, and then I followed up with another phone call. And long story short, we decided to do, right now we're scheduled for four podcasts over the next 2 months. And it's going to be a series where it's just going to be me and you talking about hunting related things. Maybe it's gear, maybe it's strategy, who the hell knows at this point, because I don't plan for anything. I guess I planned a little bit for, for today's podcast, but, with all that said, right, this series needs a name.
I know. And now that you said that, I'm going to be like racking my brain to come up with like a cool name. That's always such the hardest part.
Right.
You know, we could do like what a lot of bands do and just like come up with random words and put them together. And we have like a band name that doesn't actually mean anything, but
Velvet
it sounds
Fence.
Cool. There you go.
That sounds dumb.
It does kind of sound dumb. We're not going with that one.
No, let's pass on that one. But I was thinking something like the Czar Report. Because your last name is Czar, obviously. That's not going
that
too far
is.
Out there. But let's brainstorm for just a couple minutes. What do you think? What do you think that we're going to accomplish in this mini series?
Oh boy. Now we have to accomplish something here. We're setting goals. Well, I guess for me anyways, I'd like to just I like just talking through things. You know, a lot of times, you know, we write these articles and I spend a lot of my time brainstorming ideas for things to talk about on bowhunting.com, or I'm looking at analytics or reports of, you know, trends and whatnot. And sometimes I think like you have to talk these things out to really like get all these ideas out and see kind of what sticks. So that's kind of like my goal anyways for going into this, is to have engaging topics that hunters are talking about and then figure out, you know, kind of what we want to do from there.
Right. Okay. All right. Then okay, so you know, like how they say you're supposed to pick your porn name, right? It's like your pet and the street you live on, or something like that.
Sure.
So I would be like, I don't know. This is gonna be dumb, but I would be Molly Forth, which doesn't
kind of sounds like that kind of sounds like a girl's name. To
I know
me.
It is. So
I would be like Sam Victor. That kind of, I mean, that might work.
That sounds badass. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, that's a pretty strong name.
I would move out of the – if I knew a guy named Sam Victor was walking down the hallway right towards me, I would get out of his way.
I agree.
Okay. So can we do that with hunting? Like, can we take whitetail and – I don't know. Maybe we're just already wasting our time doing this.
I think we need to sleep on it and come up with something better and then have it for the next one.
All right. Sounds good. I'll for those of you who are listening, please don't turn off right now. Just wait a little bit, because we are going to have some engaging conversation. But we would love to hear what you guys think that this miniseries should be called. Right. So this first one obviously isn't going to have a name. It's just going to be called Justin Czar Talks with Dan Johnson. I think I might just call it, I might just call it that.
Very engaging.
Right.
People are going to tune in like crazy.
Right, right.
I'm going to come up with something good. Don't you worry.
Okay. Okay,
I've
cool.
I've got it in me.
All right. Well, That I'm putting all the responsibility on your shoulders now.
Fair enough.
Okay, cool.
I'll take it.
So you've been shed hunting at all?
Very, very, very little bit, to be completely honest with you. Very little bit. I found one teeny tiny little shed antler in a standing bean food plot this last weekend. But I've probably shed hunted for a grand total of about 45 minutes this year. I know you are having a much better shed season than I am.
Yeah.
From judging by your social media presence.
You know, I can't complain. I just wish I, you know, once you get out there and you start finding them, I wish I could get out there and find, like, spend more time walking. But, you know, three kids, full-time job, and then yep. part-time job type responsibilities don't allow you to get out there as much as you probably, as much as I would like. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I spent a day walking some public land here in Illinois that was more of a scouting trip than a shed hunting trip.
Yeah.
Because it's like two totally different things, at least for me. Like when I'm out looking for sheds, I mean, am I scouting? Yes. But like when I go out to scout, like I do this weird thing where I kind of just like stop and look around and try to analyze what I'm seeing
yeah.
at that point in time. Whereas when you're shed hunting, like it's all about just miles and covering ground quick right. and looking in the obvious spots to try to find sheds. So
yeah.
for me this spring, I've been focusing a little bit more on scouting and not so much on sheds. My buddy Mike that I hunt with picked up the big side of one of the deer that we're hoping to hunt next year.
Oh, nice.
Which is cool. So it's sometimes nice when like other people find the shed antlers for you. I don't get to keep it, but at least I get to hold it and look at it. So I know that deer's alive. You know, I've got trail camera pictures of plenty of the deer that I was chasing this last year that I know made it all the way through the season and into February and March. So I know the deer are around. So finding their antlers to me isn't as important today as it used to be. You know, I've got piles of shed antlers laying around my house that I don't even remember where I found them or what deer it was. So as I get older, I think the importance of finding shed antlers is a little bit less for me, unless there's a deer that has like a special significance for some reason, but I don't really have any of those this year.
Yeah.
So if I find more sheds, great. If not, I really don't care. I'm going to focus mostly on scouting for this fall and then on, turkey hunting season here in about a month or so.
Are you going out with Dustin the crew again out in Wyoming?
I am planning on going out there for an antelope hunt in August. Yes.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if you were going to go, because I know Clinton went out there and did some turkey hunting. Are you going to go turkey hunting too?
We were going to try to do turkey this year, but I just don't think it's going to happen. Too much travel around. And if I had to pick one or the other, I'm chasing after the thing with four legs and horns in this case,
right?
Rather than the bearded animal.
Right. Absolutely.
So yeah, for me, turkey's going to be primarily here in Illinois. We're thinking about making a quick trip back to Kansas, where I shot my bird last year, just because that's kind of, it's not that bad of a drive. It's about 8 hours. Tags are over the counter. You know, we could do a quick 2.5-3 day hunt down there and probably get into some birds. So thinking about doing that one here in a couple weeks, but that'll be kind of a last minute decision if I can sneak away from the wife and kids for a weekend.
Right. Right. So when you go to Kansas, is that a 8 hour drive over the counter tag, but is the turkey population there really good?
Well, from what I saw last year, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the farm where I killed my bird last year, I want to say we saw 50 or 60 turkeys
wow.
the day before I shot mine. And then the day I did shoot mine, we probably saw another 30 that day. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty good from what I saw anyways. I mean, we weren't there very long. So we were kind of thinking, you know, if we just go back to that same spot, you know, or that same farm, it's public area. And we didn't see anybody there last year when we went turkey hunting. So this might be worth a shot, you know, drive down on a Friday afternoon, hunt Saturday, Sunday, Monday morning, and then come home.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about it.
Right.
If my wife listens to this, this might be a surprise to her. But I don't think we have any to worry about her listening to this.
Right. Well, I tell you what, my wife, I mentioned elk hunting this year, and my wife said, oh, you're going elk hunting? Like, that's not all I've been talking about the past, you know, however many months, because I didn't get to go last year.
Right.
So there's going to, she has heard me say that I'm going elk hunting, but there hasn't been a conversation yet about me going elk hunting, if that makes sense.
Of course.
Yeah.
The official conversation.
Yeah.
The on the record, I'm going elk hunting conversation.
Absolutely.
Totally understand that.
All right. Well, we better get down to business.
Let's do it.
So I got a hold of my buddy, Lindsey Thomas, and he works for, he's the communications director at Quality Deer Management Association. And yep. I said, hey man, send me some data that I can look at. Well, just so happened that they recently just put out their whitetail report, which is just this gigantic report of all things like deer and hunting, and it's just full of statistics and really good information. And narrowing all of that down today, I want the topic of conversation to be about hunter recruitment and the decline of hunters in America. All right. So what I think we should do is start off with some statistics. And right off the bat, the statistics that I have in front of me are in 2016, 11.5 million people 16 years of age and older went hunting. Okay, that's 5% of the total U.S. population, averaging 16 days a field. All right, 80% of those 11.5 million hunters pursued big game like deer and elk. 31% pursued small game like squirrels and rabbits. 21% pursued migratory birds like geese and ducks, and then 11% hunted other animals such as coyotes and groundhogs and all like raccoons and stuff. So in 2011, so they've done this study now from 2011 to 2016, right? There has been a 16% decrease. That's 2.2 million hunters decreased that have they are no longer in the you know, less hunters is what I'm getting at, right? So what I want to talk to you today is, and I'll just ask the big vague question first, but why do you think that we are seeing a decrease in hunters? 2.2 million over 5 years.
Yeah, that's a lot of people, right? When you right. sit down and look at the numbers. And it's amazing to me when we have these conversations, because I see them come up a lot, whether it's on social media or it's in our forums. And it's like, there's these guys out there that are kind of like the naysayers, right? They're like, well, this isn't really happening. The data's flawed. Or then there's the guys that say, well, I'm not worried about it. That just means less competition in the woods.
Right.
So it's just a very interesting dynamic to me in the hunting world. You know, surrounding this particular topic. As to why it's happening, I think it's going to be almost impossible to point to any right. one thing, right? I mean, I think there's a multitude of different reasons. You know, one of the ones that I've been kind of focusing on here lately and talking to some people is lack of access to places to go hunting, essentially. I think as those places become harder and harder to come by, it's becoming increasingly more difficult to recruit new hunters, right? So, I mean, even if you recruit somebody, in a lot of places, you don't have anywhere to take them to. So without somewhere to go hunting, how are you going to recruit new people? I mean, I think that's only one of the many issues that we're facing. You know, I look at my own family, for example. You know, when I was younger, going back into high school, you know, my dad passed away fairly young. You know, he was in his 50s. But, you know, through high school and in my early 20s, like, I was hunting. My dad hunted. My grandfather hunted.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad and grandfather both passed away now, and I'm the only one, right? So I think, you know, as we look at, you know, that baby boomer population aging, you know, and some of those, you know, people are passing away or they're getting too old to hunt anymore, you're definitely starting to see, you know, that be a factor as well. But man, I tell you, there's probably a list a mile long of reasons why people aren't hunting as much as they used to.
Right, right. Let's dive into some hypotheticals here then, because, you know, aside from an older generation, you know, the baby boomers who came from a completely different era in the United States compared to today, as we all see on the news, right? Where hunting was a little bit a little bit more acceptable, and more people did it because it was in family traditions, so to speak. And then we have, you know, lots of people moving away from farms into big cities and, you know, that whole kind of thing. But aside from the baby boomers, what else specifically do you think? Well, let me back up. Let's talk about access, because that's what you brought up.
Sure.
I know for me personally, when I go and knock on doors, whether to go shed hunting or turkey hunting or try to get permission to go deer hunting, 10 years ago, if I did it and did it right, man, I could almost always get on a farm. 5 years ago, a little bit less. And today, it's very rare if I get access to a property, whether it's because there's already hunting on it or it's leased by somebody or the farmer doesn't own the property anymore. So have you seen any type of, I guess, access get declined on your end?
Sure. Heck yeah. I think we all have. You know, being in Illinois here, when I was a kid growing up, my dad had more spots to go hunt than we could hunt. So on any given afternoon when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, it was like, hey, which one of these different places do we feel like going and hunting tonight? And we would pick one. And, you know, over the span of a few years, let's call it 5 to 10 years, we lost pretty much every piece of property we hunted with the exception of maybe one.
Yeah.
So now it wasn't like, which property do we want to go on? It's okay, flip a coin to see which one of the two stands on the one property we have left are we going to go to. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think access is a huge deal. You know, public access, people talk about a lot. You know, it certainly isn't gaining in most places. If anything, it's shrinking.
Right.
And I think what's happened is, you know, I think back again to when I was younger, and it's amazing. We've grown up, you know, you and I are about the same age. I'll be 38 this year, but we grew up in this era where we saw so many things change in our lives, you know, whether it was technology and the internet kind of coming to be and just all these different changes that have happened. And when I look back to being a young man, you know, I first started hunting. We hunted with a friend of my dad's on his property that was 80 acres, right? And there was no trail cameras at the time. They didn't exist. There really was no internet. There really was, you know, nothing, you know, other than, you know, guys maybe had a couple pictures of some of the deer they shot in their pickup truck that they would show their buddies. And, you know, back in those days, there may have been 4 or 5 of us hunting that 80-acre piece, and nobody cared. You know, it was like the owner didn't care if you wanted to come hunt. He was like, yeah, man, let's go hunt. I got to stand over here. You know, good luck. And if one of us over the course of the year shot a halfway decent deer, let's say a 2-year-old or older, everybody was happy. And they were like, yeah, man, you killed that deer. And, you know, just look how the times have changed. You know, you've got, right, you know, land values are increasing, lease prices are increasing, guys are buying these farms. And what I think is a big problem is, you know, where 3 or 4 of us used to hunt that 80 acres, you get one guy that comes in, buys it up, kicks everybody else off and wants it for himself because now he wants to manage it. He's going to run trail cameras and he's going to plant food plots. He's going to do all these things and he's going to try to grow these deer in hopes of him shooting a bigger deer. So now the thought of him bringing a buddy out or whatever, it's kind of like, eh, I don't know that I want you to come hunt my farm because I've spent however many hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy the place and all these improvements and everything else, and I kind of want to shoot these deer. So I think a lot of hunters are being displaced by that, you know, habit that we've all kind of just grown accustomed to. And I'm not necessarily saying that this is a bad thing or that there's something wrong with hunting because of it, but it's just the times have changed.
Right.
And a lot of people have been displaced because of it. You know, you've got, you know, some people that are, you know, fortunate enough and have worked hard and have amassed a lot of money and been able to go buy big pieces of ground. But now they kick everybody off and, you know, it's reserved for the elite few that are able to go in there, you know, and hunt those deer. You get all the guys that have been displaced. Now, what are they doing? They're either trying to, you know, band together and get a lease, right, if you can get the price down low enough. But I mean, even lease prices are through the roof with, you know, the way outfitters will go in and pay for some of the stuff. So then they go hunt maybe public land, which, you know, everybody complains that public land is just overrun with too many people. Well, where do these guys come from, right? If hunter numbers are declining as a whole, how come there's more people hunting public land? Well, the answer is I think they're being displaced from other areas.
Right.
And again, I don't know that there's an answer to this quote unquote problem. This is just kind of my theory on why we're seeing some of the stuff going on out there.
Yeah. And then you take into consideration some of the hunters that are being displaced. and maybe they're just some weekend warriors who are just like, instead of going out, like for me, I've been kicked off multiple properties over the years because of sales or lease rights. And instead of quitting hunting, I went and knocked on more doors, found new land to hunt, and just continued to grind it out, right?
Sure.
So do you feel that there's a good portion of these hunters that are being displaced that are just kind of hanging up their equipment and being like, hey, man, I don't even want to knock on doors anymore. I think I'm just going to quit hunting.
Yeah, absolutely. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not everybody's is eaten up with it as you and I, and probably a lot of the guys that are listening to this. Right. But when you think about it, like, I know plenty of people that I hang out with or I'm friends with or family with that are more casual type hunters. And you know, if they lose their spot, and it's like, you know what, I don't have the money to and the time and the energy and effort to go out and try to find another one. Like, I'm just going to hang it up and go do something else. I'll go fishing, or I'll go play golf, or I'll do whatever, you know, sit at home, watch football for all I care. Like, I think that happens a lot. Sometimes it's hard for us as guys that are like super into and addicted to the stuff to fathom that there's other people that hunt that don't care about it as much as we do. Like, it's hard for me to wrap my brain around at times, but they're definitely out there. There's no question about that. I mean, I know a few of those guys who have just hung it up because they just didn't have anywhere to go.
Right. Right. So the next kind of follow-up question, obviously, and you kind of led into it with some of the comments you made, but money. Right? Land's going up, leases are going up. So you have to have a greater disposable income to be able to continue to do what you want to do if property in the state you live in or area that you live in is being sold and leased up. So do you see this eventually becoming a quote unquote rich man's sport?
Man, you'd like to say no, but I mean, it's kind of hard to argue with the trends, yeah. Right? You know, and you hate to think about that, but the writing's on the wall, at least in certain areas, right? It may not be that way everywhere. Like, luckily for us, you know, some of the Western states have a plethora of public land, far more than we have here in the Midwest, you know, that can support some more, you know, hunting on it. You know, here in the Midwest, you know, especially like, this whole thing is driven by deer, right? I mean, right. White-tailed deer and antlers drives the hunting industry as a whole. So as, you know, people put a higher value on antlers and on the success of managing and shooting these more mature deer, they're willing to pay more for leases. They're willing to pay more per acre for farms. So, yeah, I mean, in that regard, it's definitely, you know, becoming or has already in some cases become kind of a rich man's sport, so to speak. You know, there'll always be opportunities. I mean, for the guy that wants to go out, buy a budget bow, you know, on the cheap, get some used gear, go out, there is still some good public hunting opportunities here in the Midwest. Don't get me wrong. You could go out and still have an opportunity to enjoy the outdoors and hunt and shoot some animals. But let's face it, we're all kind of getting to the point where like we all want to shoot big bucks, right? I mean, that's kind of just what we want to do. And, you know, those opportunities are much further and fewer between, you know, on some of those public lands than they are in other places. So, yeah, I think it's definitely trending that way. I mean, I don't think it'll ever, and I sure hope it never gets to the point where the average person isn't able to afford to do anything, you know, hunting related, because I certainly don't think it's there yet. But I guess only time will tell.
Yeah. Which kind of the next transition here is the big racks, right? So we have the hunting industry who, and it's there's really no conversation around it. Everything that they do from a marketing standpoint is about big racks, right? Everybody wants to shoot a big racked animal. So do you feel that the hunting industry and the way that they market the products and the, I guess the industry as a whole has something to do with this hunter decline, whether it is through, you know, people not being able to kill big bucks because they don't have big bucks in their area or they're on public land, or the fact that a guy like me, let's say, who wins the lottery tomorrow or whatever, the first thing I would do is go out and buy a gigantic piece of property and hunt it for me and my family, right? So I would be displacing hunters at that point to grow, to get deer to an older age class so that their antlers may get bigger, right? Do you feel that the hunting industry is kind of also responsible for hunter decline?
I don't know that I would go that far. I mean, I think maybe unintended to a certain degree, possible, you know, but I mean, I'm not going to fault any company for trying to market their product as something that's going to help anybody be more successful at what they want to do, right? I mean, it happens everywhere, whether it's that this fishing lure is going to help you catch more fish, or this driver is going to help you hit the golf ball farther, or this sight's going to help you shoot your gun more accurately. Like, we all want to get better at what we do and what we enjoy as our hobby. So is it maybe an unintended side effect? Possibly. You know, I don't think, you know, anybody's doing anything malicious there.
Yeah.
You know, but, and I think it's more than just the hunting industry, right? I mean, it's to a certain degree, like, I blame social media for a lot of things that are going wrong in life, you know, and I hate to say that as somebody who, you know, to a certain degree makes a part of my living off of social media.
Yeah.
But man, I tell you, you know, the quest for people to, you know, get the gratification of that like, that share, that comment, that pat on the back, that attaboy by, you know, posting the picture of their big deer or whatever their accomplishment may be in life, you know, has really just helped further that along. It's kind of thrown gasoline on that fire. The fire used to just be going to your local pro shop, hanging out there and showing everybody that walked in the picture of the big buck you killed, or trying to, let's say, get your picture in the back of North American Whitetail or Bowhunter magazine. I remember growing up, like, that's all I wanted was someday to shoot a buck, send my picture in to Bowhunter magazine and see myself there. And now we've just totally bypassed that whole process. You don't need those media outlets anymore. You've got your own soapbox to stand on in the form of social media, you know, which has just helped further people's desire for notoriety and in all aspects of life, right? Not just hunting. So I think there's just this perfect storm of things that have happened, you know, that have put us where we're at today. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, hunter numbers are declining. I don't think they'll necessarily ever go away, because I don't think we're necessarily losing hunters because people are in general losing interest in hunting. I think it's, you know, it's going to reduce to this, it's going to find its level, so to speak, you know, and it's going to be reduced to this is the number of hunters that we can support on the landscape with the way that things look today. And then we're going to hopefully just kind of level out, and that's where it's going to be at.
Okay. And now this would be a hard question to answer if I was a landowner and I was also a hardcore deer hunter, right? But do you think that it is the responsibility of, let's say, someone who owns thousands of acres of lands and plays that, you know, is also a hardcore deer hunter that's really managing their property, to bring other hunters in to try to do their part to, as far as recruitment is concerned?
Sure. That's a horribly difficult question to answer, right? Because again, these are people that have worked hard, made smart decisions in life, and have put themselves into a position to be able to afford to do these things. No knock against them. I think there's a lot of this weird thing going on in our society where we want to, like, criticize people for being successful in today's day and age. It's a very weird thing to me. So I'm certainly not doing that by any means, but it definitely puts you in a precarious position where, again, now you've displaced all these people. You've got this big tract of land. You've spent maybe millions of dollars managing it. Like, who should or should you not bring in to be able to kind of enjoy that with you? You know, are you really limiting that access? So that's a hard question to answer, man. And I'm not going to fault anybody for saying they want to be, to a certain degree, somewhat selfish about that. I can't fault them for doing that. Is it potentially contributing to a bigger problem? Maybe, you know, but again, I mean, you and I would probably be hypocrites if we said we would do anything different, right?
Right.
Because I know, I mean, would I maybe bring some of my close friends in there? And would I, sure, ask them to pitch in and help out and scout and plant food plots with me and enjoy everything that I'm doing? Sure, I would. You know, you don't want to necessarily hand it to them, but I'm also not going to just let everybody and their brother come out there and kind of reap the rewards of my hard work, or luck if I win the lottery case, right? But yeah, I mean, it's that's a really difficult question. And I see where people get put into positions, because I've known people that have gone out and bought property and, right. you know, and then all their buddies want to come hunt it and they get put in a weird situation where it's like, hey, man, like, I just can't have everybody else out here. I feel like if I let one guy, then I got to let the next guy and the next guy. And, you know, it does have a tendency to cause hard feelings. I mean, I know people that have, you know, bought property and then all of a sudden you start hearing from people that you haven't talked to in years. Like, hey, man, wanted to reconnect with you. I remember when we used to, you know, go hunt wherever. I heard you bought some place, dude. I'd love to come out and go hunting with you. And it's like, oh, geez, okay, well, thanks for the phone call, but no thanks.
Yeah, right. So then the other side of this is not only do we have a reduce in numbers, right? So we have 2.2 million less hunters over the last 5 years, but those 11 or what is it here? I think it was 1.5 million in total. Hunters spent $25.6 billion in hunting in 2016. Now, that is a pretty big economy, right? I mean, that's a big economy. And I don't know if you noticed this at the ATA show this year, but I just felt that there was a lot less companies there and a lot less people, like dealers and mom and pop shops there. And I think that has to do with this 5 year decline in hunters spending, which says $11 billion less dollars or 30% over the past 5 years as well. So
yeah, I'd be interested in maybe delving a little bit deeper into those numbers to see if there's some sort of breakdown to tell us, are these numbers, is this less license sales, less gear, product that was purchased? Is it, you know, what are those numbers made up of, right?
Right.
It's hard to say unless I know that.
Okay, so here I have that information in front of me.
Okay.
Okay. So 2016 hunting expenditures. Okay. So that's $25.6 billion in 2016. 48% was gear and equipment. Okay. We have licensing, 3% only for licensings and fees. 11% is under the other trip costs. We have 2% for lodging and 13% for transportation and 10% for food.
Okay.
And then there's a 13%, which is called other.
Is that breakdown roughly the same for both years, like percentage wise, like from the decline to, or where it started through the decline, are the percentages roughly the same? So we declined like in all aspects.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm looking at a pie graph with,
sure.
With the breakdown. So all I know is that in that, those are the percentages for that 25.6 billion.
Got it. Which is still a lot of money.
Right.
Still a lot of money. And as long as there's that much money involved, you know, you've got somewhat of a certain degree of protection, right? But in this modern weird age of what I call the e-mobs,
right?
The social justice warriors, as a lot of people refer to them as, in this weird mob mentality where like hunting is this bad thing. Like even that big economy sometimes doesn't save you from the wrath of the e-mobs, as I like to call them. So I don't know, man. I really don't know.
Right. So this is where, you know, the money talks, bullshit walks kind of, you know, when we can't show our lawmakers that we, let's say that 25.6 billion goes down every single year that we lose hunters because there's less hunters, then the economy becomes less. And then we can't justify to the lawmakers or to the non-hunters saying that, hey, we have an economy here and it's good for the economy. That shrinks. Do you think that certain laws, it's going to be easier for the anti-hunters to maybe pass laws because of a shrinking economy?
Potentially, right? There's always that potential. But, you know, with the way that our system is set up, I mean, and I think we saw this in the last you know, presidential election was that, you know, our system was designed specifically so that people in a certain geographical region that maybe has a high concentration of population can't dictate what happens in the rest of the country, right? So when you look at, let's say, a state like Illinois, you know, yes, we have a massive population of people in Chicago, most of whom have probably never hunted, don't care about hunting, and may even vote or be in favor of getting rid of hunting. But, you know, we're still broken down like any other state into, you know, regional areas. And we have our senators and our state representatives, and they all get together in Springfield and they vote on kind of this legislation. And when you look at Illinois as a whole, and I'll just use this state because it's where I live and I'm familiar with it, you know, there's only so many representative areas around Chicago that may have that view, whereas you look at the rest of the state, which is traditionally more rural, more conservative, more friendly to hunting, fishing, the outdoors, that types of things. Like, it provides some insulation to a certain degree against those types of things from happening, but it certainly does not make them impossible. I think, as we've seen in, I think it was New Jersey, where they just got rid of the bear hunt, which was just reinstated by, I think it was maybe Chris Christie or somebody, like reinstated. It was there for 5-6 years. Now he's out. They've got a new governor. And now the bear hunt's going away again. So, I mean, this certainly isn't something that we are immune to, right? Which is why I think it's more important than ever for hunters to, you know, stick together, make your voices heard, talk to your local representatives, join up with organizations that are out there fighting to defend hunting. Don't just sit on the sidelines and think that, like, oh, somebody else is going to take care of it for me. You know, do something now before it becomes an issue.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense, man. So here, let's see. So kind of moving on from that point, obviously, the more money an economy, a specific economy makes, the more money, the more say I would say we would have in lawmaking and stuff like that. And with 5% of the total U.S. population being hunters, there is a much larger percentage out there that is not only, I guess, not necessarily all anti-hunters, but I guess not, don't really care one way or the other if hunting happens. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I guess it's,
and no, and I think when you hear people talk, what everybody usually says is, like, those are the people we need to be most concerned about, right? The people that don't necessarily care one way or another, because there's a far larger group of those people than there are of people that are anti-hunting. It's all the people in the middle that aren't on one side of the fence or the other. Those are the ones in the end that are going to be the decision makers. They've got the biggest voice. And that's why it's just so important for hunters to represent themselves in the proper light, so that you're not pushing those people away from hunting, you know. And I think, you know, as you start to see, and I'll just, you know, drop a couple names of people off the top of my head. When you see a guy like Cameron Haynes out there, right, who, love him or hate him, right, I know he's kind of a polarizing figure to a certain degree with some people, but he's a great voice for hunting. He is a good advocate for hunting. He portrays it in the light that is actually swayed, I think, a lot more people towards hunting than away from it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, when you see a guy like that and the good that he's doing for hunting, when you see somebody like Eva Shockey, right, who, again, you know, from the inside of the hunting community perspective, like, I think everybody likes Eva. She's a super nice person if you've ever met her, very down to earth. But if you had to pick, you know, a female ambassador for the hunting community to go out and represent us, I don't know that you could pick a better person than Eva Shockey. She's very well spoken, intelligent, likable, and represents hunting in a great light. And I think all hunters, you know, need to kind of, you know, take a cue from these guys in the way that we represent ourselves. I know that there's a lot of people out there that still to this day are kind of like that, you know, just in your face, you know, if you don't like it, tough shit, I don't care, type of mentality. But, you know, unfortunately, I think, you know, that does more harm for our cause than it does good. You know, a guy like Ted Nugent, again, love him or hate him, I think to a certain degree, in some cases, has turned some hunters off from hunting because of his personality, you know, and some of the abrasiveness maybe that he has. While hunters love him and hold him in a very esteemed light, there's a lot of non-hunters that have kind of gone that other direction. And we just need to be careful that, you know, the people that we put on these pedestals to represent the hunting community are representing us in a light that's going to be more beneficial for the long-term survival of hunting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's, again, really good points. Now, you know, we've talked about this data here that QDMA put out about a decline over the past 5 years. Now, there's some other interesting data that comes from this. Not all regions of the United States are seeing a decrease, right? So sure. they have kind of a breakdown of the United States and Canada, and they have the West, the Midwest, the Northeast, and the Southeast, okay? And there's a decline in the Northeast. There's a decline over these are average percents. So there's a decline in the Northeast, a decline in the Midwest, a decline in the West, and also a decline in Canada. With that said, there has been a 9% increase over the past 10 years of hunters in the Southeast. And those states are Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina. For some reason, Oklahoma's in there. South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas. So my question to you is why do you think that the Southeast is going against the grain and showing an increase?
I wish I knew. I don't know if it's booming populations of animals, maybe to a certain degree. Like when I look at some of these areas that are declining, like I feel like certain areas, at least here in Illinois, I know we've had kind of a decline in our deer population, some of our harvest numbers. Maybe the Southeast isn't being subjected to some of these other things we've been talking about with the displacement of hunters, because it's not a trophy hotspot the way that the Midwest is. And when you look at the West, like, I don't know that people are buying large tracts of lands out there. I can only kind of talk for the Midwest, but maybe they're immune to some of these other factors, so to speak, that are causing less hunters. I mean, I don't know. That's kind of just my best guess, maybe off the top of my head. What do you think?
Yeah, I also see that states in the Southeast are also what you would like a traditional type of hunting, where big bucks are awesome, but people just love to get out and, go hunting, as opposed to the Midwest, where I think there's such a focus on large racks in the Midwest, like Iowa and Illinois, where you're going to find a lot more people with the big dollars going and buying these farms and buying these leases. Because, I mean, if I had to pick between two states to lease a property in, I'm probably not going to go to South Carolina when I can go to Iowa. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, the largest increase over the last 10 years in percentage is Tennessee. So Tennessee has had a 35% increase in hunters in the last 10
years.
Yeah,
I'm looking at that. I see that. So they're up to 302,000. Is that the chart you're looking at? 300,000 deer hunters?
Yep.
Which is crazy, because you look at a state like Illinois at 244, we're down 9%.
Yeah.
So, but I also think like Tennessee and maybe a state like, I don't know where Kentucky falls in this list. Kentucky's up 10% to 350,000. I think like both of those states are experiencing, booms in deer populations. They're experiencing bigger deer than they have in the past. Whereas Illinois is kind of trending in the other direction. So maybe it's just hunters traveling. That was one of the things I thought too, is, maybe some of this stuff is hunters traveling to some of these hot spot areas. Cause I don't know exactly what these numbers are based on. Is that just license sales? So does that just mean that we're getting more license sales in Tennessee? And if so, why are people going there? Are there more generous bag limits? Is there a longer season?
Right.
Is there more land? Is it more easily accessible? Are the leases cheaper? What are the factors that are making 35% increase in deer hunters in Tennessee?
Right.
Kind of hard to say.
Right. And it's crazy. I'm again looking at these numbers, and I always hear people bitch and complain about living in Pennsylvania and how there's so much pressure there in all of these states. And Pennsylvania has 700,000 hunters is what this chart shows. And that is higher than the next, which is either Wisconsin or Minnesota, by almost 100,000.
Sure.
So
Pennsylvania is also a really big state.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
from land area. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, land area.
Yeah.
So I guess it'd be interesting to see like the breakdown. And I know it's still very, very high on the list as far as like number of hunters, let's say per square mile or whatever the case may be. But sometimes you got to look at the size of the state. And then in a lot of cases, you got to look at like what the timbered area of the state is. Like Pennsylvania is a pretty timber heavy state in a lot of it.
Right.
And so is Wisconsin. Like the northern half of Wisconsin is pretty much all timber. Southern half's a lot more farmland. You look at like, there's places in Illinois where you feel like you get out in a field, you could look and you can't see a tree in any direction. You know, a lot of Illinois is just flat farmland, so we can't support as many deer or as many hunters because we have, you know, less timbered areas. So, you know, there's a lot of things that go into numbers can be very deceiving, right? Depending on how you look at them.
Absolutely. So as a hunter, I'm looking at this same chart and I'm seeing that there is a 30% decrease in hunters, only 60,000 hunters for North Dakota and 67,000 for South Dakota, which, you know, I feel like I have my ear to the wire when it comes to, you know, feeling out where the hotspots are in the United States. And two states that I always think about going and hunting are North Dakota and South Dakota. So for a guy who wants to go out and take a trip, and I see there's a 30% increase in hunters, which tells me maybe that's because of a shrinking deer population, but I doubt it. That tells me that there's going to probably be better quality deer and better numbers there for an out-of-state trip. What are your thoughts?
I would agree with that. I think there's been plenty of articles, right, written out there, like how to figure out where you should go if you want to do a trip. And one of the things they always look at is the number of tags sold versus maybe the deer population or how big the state is. And they tell you to go to those areas with lower deer numbers, or not lower deer numbers, but lower hunter numbers. Sure. Yeah. I mean, nobody wants to go travel out of state to somewhere that's like ultra pressured. Right. Like maybe unless you've got like a buddy that, you know, owns a bunch of property and he's cool enough to come let you hunt it, you know, and it's privately managed and it doesn't experience that same pressure. But yeah, nobody's clamoring to go run to Pennsylvania and go hunt, you know, state game lands out there, you know. So I can definitely see those as being kind of factors, I guess, when you look at planning an out-of-state hunt, like where do I want to go? Yeah, that's definitely one of the big factors that people look at.
And I got to clear something up here. I was wrong. Texas is actually the highest, the state highest number of deer hunters, and that's 738,000, roughly.
Everything's bigger in Texas, they say, including their deer hunting population. That's pretty amazing, 738,000 deer hunters.
Yeah, and again, they have a gigantic state, right?
Sure, as far huge.
One state that's not on here, and I don't know why, but I'm curious, is Alaska. I don't see any, I don't know, maybe because there's no deer. There's only a couple species of deer. There's no whitetail deer. And maybe they don't.
Yeah.
They don't, anyway, that's just.
Yeah, or maybe they didn't report back with data or something like that when they reached out. Yeah, I don't see them on the list here.
Right. So,
well, it's just weird because like some of the states on here have asterisks, like California, Montana, Oregon, Utah, which I would, data not provided or unavailable. So on this, maybe they just forgot about Alaska. Poor Alaska. They're always getting forgot.
I know. Except when it comes to the oil.
Exactly.
So I want to ask you your personal opinion as the hunting community, not necessarily as a rich hunter who has a ton of ground, or the hunting industry, but as the hunting community, which I consider me and you and the people who listen to this podcast, are, as far as those people are involved, anyway, what I'm getting at is, what do you think, or any ideas that we as a community can do to help recruit more hunters to step in and, you know, test the waters of hunting?
Sure. Well, back to my point from earlier, I think a lot of it has to do with how we represent ourselves in the public eye. You know, it used to be almost impossible for a hunter to get his message out, right? Because there was no mainstream media outlets that are talking about hunting or covering hunting. But again, as bad as social media may B, in some cases, it's created an extremely powerful tool to get your message out there.
Right.
So I think it's very important to hunters to, you know, be educated, convey our message in the proper format. You know, the biggest thing that, like, when you look at people that don't hunt, you know, and you ask them, what do you think about hunting? Like, what is some of the most common things you get? I know for me anyways, it's like, oh my gosh, how can you kill Bambi, right? Like, that's probably the number one thing you hear from somebody that doesn't hunt. And they may not be opposed to eating meat. They may not even be opposed to eating venison if you bring them some. But something about the hunting process, like, that just doesn't necessarily sit well with them. And it kind of stems back to this, like, how can you kill something you love? How can you kill something so beautiful? You're just, you know, bloodthirsty, you know, whatever, killers. So I just think it's really, really important for people as hunting the community to you know, portray ourselves in a way to try to get through to people that, you know, hunting isn't about killing. We kill because we have to be successful at hunting.
Right.
But that's not ultimately, like, the goal isn't necessarily, we don't hunt because we want to kill per se.
Right.
Right. So I think, like, that's a huge thing, like, public perception. I know there was a thing on SNL, I think it was this last week or the week before, where they did this gun debate and then hunters and trying to, like, just, you know, when you look at, you know, something like that, like, to a lot of people, I mean, that is their view of hunting, you know. So it's just important that we have the correct message to combat that to people, to try to win them ultimately to our sides. Because, I mean, make no mistake, it is kind of a war, right? And we want to win people over to our side versus having them go to the other side. So just being careful about what we portray, you know, on social media, on YouTube. I mean, gosh, there's so many hunting videos on YouTube that I watch, and it's like, you know what, if this was only the hunting community watching these things and other hunters that understood the killing and the blood part of hunting, it would be one thing. But when there's millions of non-hunters out there and you see these videos that are glorifying, like, massive amount of blood sprayed everywhere, like, it's in the title of the video, extreme graphic, like, what, it's just like, you know, these people just don't realize the damage that those types of videos cause to the average person that's watching them. You know, and they're just trying to get more YouTube likes or watches, and they're trying to maybe monetize their little videos. And, you know, again, probably an unintended consequence of what they're doing. So I think the biggest thing we can do to help the future of hunting, portray it in a light that's going to keep people on our side. Number two, I talked about, is kind of just reaching out to your local representatives when applicable, joining up with associations that are out there fighting for hunting. Those are two big things. And then, you know, recruiting hunters, like, and I know it's a hard thing to do because a lot of us are, to a certain degree, selfish about the deer that we're chasing and that we want to shoot. But sometimes, you know, for the greater good of things, swallowing your pride a little bit and finding the opportunity to take somebody out there. It's easy to take your own kids, right? Because it's like, we want our kids to be successful. We want them to follow in our footsteps. And we're perfectly okay if our kid comes out and shoots the giant buck that we've been chasing. We're not always okay when it's somebody else. Right. So I think maybe taking a look inside of ourselves and remembering that it is only just a deer and we're out there to enjoy the sport of hunting and what it gives to us, you know, aside from big racks. You know, if we can manage to swallow our pride every once in a while, bring somebody out hunting with you that hasn't hunted before, it certainly isn't going to hurt our cause. That's for sure.
Right. All good points, my friend. Man, I had something I was going to say, but I forgot about it because I didn't write it down. And that's a flaw on my part. I'm not very good at that.
yeah, I have that same flaw. Don't worry. A lot of us do.
So with, you know, you mentioned selfishness. And one thing that I always say to myself, okay, this year I'm going to pay more attention to conservation. And I think by having this platform, I focused a lot more on that. But before that, I think I can put myself into the same category as most people, where they really want to do something, but then life gets in the way, right? And you're just like, man, I was gonna go and maybe volunteer and do something, but now I gotta watch my kids. I got a sick kid, or I was going to do, you know, maybe donate some money, but I forgot and I didn't, you know. And we have this saying, you know, that people have started coming up with, where licensing and tags is not enough for conservation anymore. We have to do more. So, I mean, do you think that it's now time for people to kind of start reaching into their pockets and donating to conservation causes?
Sure. I mean, money makes the world go round, right? So, and whether that's donating to, you know, different organizations, or I don't know, fundraisers, whatever it may be, you know, like, or just joining the Sportsman's Alliance or any of these other different organizations that are out there. Yeah, I definitely think, I mean, reaching in your pockets and donating a little bit here and there certainly is not a bad thing.
Agree. Agree. So let's see here. Do you have, you know, we kind of covered a big broad topic this, sure, on this podcast, but do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, not to, I don't want to make this, it's, sometimes we get into these grooves where we're talking about these things and it seems like, you know, the end is near for hunting and it's this bleak, dark picture. I mean, I don't think that that's going to happen. I am very optimistic about the future of hunting. Honestly, I love to see the trend of more people coming out as hunters, as outdoorsmen. Outdoorsmen, I sound like a redneck right there. But I mean, there's a lot more, like, I feel like people in the public eye that are coming out and not being afraid to stand up and say, yes, I'm a hunter. You know, you've seen it. You know, Trump's kid, you know, Don Jr. is a big hunter and he's been a big advocate of that. But when you see a guy like, let's say, Chris Pratt, right, who's a Hollywood actor, you know, he lives in a world that is probably very anti-hunting in that kind of small community, to come out and talk about hunting or talk about farming and raising and killing animals and eating their meat, like, that's a big deal. And it's great to see, you know, back to the Cam Haines thing, you roll into like a Joe Rogan, right, who's had a tremendous influence and reaches a lot of people through his podcast. It's great to see some of these things happening. And I think that tide, to a certain degree, is starting to turn, right, in favor of hunting. I have people that I grew up with that have never hunted in their lives, that know I'm a hunter, that have actually reached out to me and been like, hey, man, thinking about trying to get into hunting, right? Thinking about maybe trying bow hunting. I listen to Rogan a lot. I've listened to Cam Haines. Like, they make it sound really interesting. I'm over here going like, man, I really failed in my duty as a hunter because I've known you for 20 years and I've never inspired you to want to go hunt. But, you know, it's cool to see some of these things happening. So I really do think, like, if we just keep the pedal to the gas, right, and keep moving forward in the direction that we're going in terms of public perception of hunting, and we have a voice that's unified to fight back against some of the negative messages that are out there, you know, I think hunting is going to be around for hopefully forever, you know, for my kids and their kids and subsequent generations to enjoy. So, you know, I am optimistic about it in spite of some of the challenges, some of the downward decline, maybe, of some of these numbers. I'm optimistic that, you know, things are going to be okay in the end.
That's a good way to end it, my friend.
Thanks.
I'm
positive. Yeah, I try to be positive, man.
That's good. Yeah, the world needs a lot more positivity.
I agree, 100%.
Well, Mr. Czar, man, how do you think this first one turned out?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, it's some dark subjects, right, all things considered. Sometimes it's more enjoyable to just talk about what we're going to do when we go out and try to chase deer and other animals around. But it's also something that I think a lot of people avoid talking about in depth, and sometimes it's hard to maybe shine a light on yourselves and think like, maybe I'm a little bit of a part of this problem. So it's just a good conversation to have. So I think it went well, man. I'm looking forward to doing some more of these in the future. You know, one thing I do want to mention is that we're working on some stuff at bowhunting.com, specifically as it pertains to the land access programs that some of these states have. You know, Kansas has a great program, which is their walk-in hunt areas, which is essentially privately owned land that is publicly accessible for hunting. Wisconsin has a similar program in place where the state, you know, rewards these landowners for allowing people to hunt on their property, whether it be in the form of a tax credit or whatever the case may be. It's a great program that allows up more access to lands for hunting. So we're doing some kind of editorial pieces on researching, like, how did these programs come about? How well are they working? How are they managed? How's it helping the state? And we're hoping to shed some more light on this type of stuff and maybe, you know, in the long-term future, get some more support from the industry, whether it's maybe the ATA or just other companies within the industry, to go and try to get similar programs started in other states. I think access to land is one of the bigger problems we face as hunters. So, you know, if we can actually shed some light on programs that are helping to solve that problem and maybe try to get them in other places, I feel like we're putting our best foot forward to combat this issue. So it's something that we're working on here kind of in the background. We're in the preliminary stages of planning some of these articles out, reaching out to some state agencies, doing some interviews. So sometime probably this summer, we're going to have a pretty big kind of expose come up on bowhunting.com about these programs, what they are, how to take advantage of them, and maybe why other states should be participating. So I'm pretty excited about that.
I like it. That's awesome. You're walking the walk.
Trying to. My buddy Jason McKee works over at Hunter Specialties, and him and I were talking about this issue, a couple weeks ago. He was at some hunting camp with a bunch of industry people, and they were, everybody was kind of bitching about the lack of hunting and sales being down and everything else. And he was sitting around going, "Hey, how come we're not talking about land access? Because I moved to a new state to take a job, and I can't find anywhere to go hunt with my kids, right? So, how am I supposed to get them into hunting if I can't find somewhere to hunt?" So that's kind of what spurred this whole conversation a couple months ago, and we've kind of taken it upon ourselves to take that ball and run with it. So I'm pretty excited about how that's going to shake out in the end.
Man, I'm looking forward to what's going to come of that. That's awesome.
Yeah, me too. So,
well, I'll see you in 2 weeks, man.
Yeah, sounds good, buddy. I hope I can get out and find some more shed antlers and have something exciting to talk about on the next episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's podcast. And if you haven't already, you can find QDMA's Whitetail Report 2018 online. So just go to QDMA.com, and I think it's QDMA.com. Anyway, just Google QDMA, and you'll be able to find this 2018 report. Look through it. A lot of data. I'm a data guy. So a lot of statistics in there about, like what we talked about today, and a lot more. I think it's like a 67 page document. Really interesting. So if you get the time, please go check it out. Huge shout out to Justin for not only doing three more of these, but to taking time today to hop on the podcast, man. I know he's got kids too. His life is crazy busy. Huge shout out to each and every one of you who has taken time to download and listen to this podcast, man. Shout out to that. Huge shout out to Gearhead, Wasp, Ozonics, Ripcord, Exodus, Bighorn Outfitters, Lone Wolf. Thank you for your support, because without your support, this podcast would not be happening. So please, if you haven't already, go out and support those companies, because they support this podcast. I'm getting tired. I'm starting to fade. I just got a couple minutes left, Johnson. You can do this. All right, here we go. I'm back on the horse. I'm going to finish this podcast strong. If you haven't already, go check out the Nine Finger Chronicles on social media, Facebook, Instagram. Go check out Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network social media as well on Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't already, go enter your email address at the bottom of every page on the on sportsmansnation.com. And what you'll be able to do is, that's basically signing up for the newsletter. That's going to be starting to happen at some point in time. Other than that, guys, if you're going to be in a tree, please, for the love of God, wear your damn safety harness. Have a good week.